Good evening, everyone. Wonderful to see you all again. I'm just wondering, when others hear the sound of Joa's bell, is it very short? Is it just... Yeah, I don't know what the thing is, Joa, with your bell. It's maybe it's too close to the microphone or something. I don't know. Anyway, just something to look into. I wanted to say that before I forgot. I've been involved this week with helping a very old friend to move from the place that he has lived for 40 years here in Paris, and with his wife and they raised their daughter there. It's been a very touching process of seeing him. It's very difficult for him to let go and to leave where he has lived all of these years, a place that he built. In fact, he bought an old industrial space in 1981 and with his hands, he basically built the place, put in rooms. I helped him put in the floor with some other people, put in everything, plumbing, electricity, he did it all. And it's a fabulous, at the time it was a neighborhood no one wanted to live, now it's become very fashionable. And so he's getting a huge amount of money for the apartment that he's selling. And he paid very little for it at the time. He was a poor photographer. But his health is failing. He's 74 years old. There's some very steep stairs that lead up to the place, kind of like Dutch apartments sometimes, where you have these very steep stairs that go up. And he can't do it anymore. His wife is a bit younger than him and she's in good health, so she probably could still do it, but he can't. So they had to sell. And so there's been this process of letting go. And at the same time, we spent Monday morning, just he and I there. And it was very joyful remembering parties, because it was a real party place. He always had big dinners and lots of events. My first marriage, my first wedding party took place there. And lots of old times. We also worked together at the newspaper, so we had a lot. We have a big history together. And so it was at once joyful and sad, especially for him, I think. So I've been staying with that this week and wondering what is it that speaks to me in this story so much, and what is it that his wife said to me after I talked to her on Monday night after I had spent the morning with him alone. And she said, "So how did it go with him?" And I said, "It was great. We had a really nice time together." She said, "Oh, really? Because he's so mean to everyone else. And he's just quarreling with her all the time. And because he's so upset." And that's the way that it comes out then. And I said, "No, you know, it was really nice. It was, we had a great time together." And um, And I don't really know why that is, actually. She says, oh, it's because you're like family. But sometimes with family, we fight a lot. So I said, maybe it's family, but without the family or something. So I've been looking at, so what made that difference too? I kept coming back to, well, our practice. This guy does not practice, at least in any formal tradition or any formal way. And I thought, well, you know, what is it that allows me to appreciate just what is? Because I think that's what helped to be joyful in with him, is that I could just appreciate what is. You know, seeing him go through all of his work, his beautiful photos and piles of newspapers. He has, you know, I think a collection of the newspaper Libération, this big French newspaper, since it was founded in 1968 or something. And just all kinds of stuff, 40 years of stuff and objects. And I could appreciate I was encouraging him to throw things away. Not so, I wasn't saying, oh, throw that away, Charlie. But I was, you know, kind of pointing out to him, okay, where's the pile of things that are being thrown away? And where's the pile of things that you still want to go through? So we managed to do that. And then when that was too much for him, I helped him. He wanted to pack his photos in bubble wrap and all this stuff. And I helped him do that very meticulously. And I guess the fact that I could let him have his process and appreciate each step of it, and not judge his process. I think his wife judges a lot and says, oh no, you should do it this way. You're not doing it fast enough. Let's get rid of this. And that annoys him then. And I was just accompanying him and helping him be there with him. And it reminded me of, I forget who said this, but I don't know where I read this, but that there's the seasons of awakening or seasons of wisdom, you can say. And so winter wisdom is the wisdom of equality. The cold wisdom of equality. This is the absolute. So it's like snow that just covers all distinctions, differences, all defining characteristics. It's all the same. And what arises from this wisdom is a love for everything equally. And then there is the warm wisdom of spring, of the warm wisdom of differentiation. When distinctions become clear, the snow melts, and all of the plants come up in their own way with their own colors and their own time. And there's new birth of little animals and insects, and it's warm again. The distinctions become clear, and we can see the beauty of each thing. Everything is seen for what it is, instead of being all covered by the snow. Or even if there is no snow, everything is all brown. This is in a climate where we have distinctive seasons. In this warm wisdom of spring, it's the season of loving each thing for itself, Whereas in the winter wisdom, we love everything equally. We can't see the differences because it's all covered in snow, but we love it all equally. And then in the spring, when we can see the differences, we love each thing for itself, for what it is, exactly as it is. And I, so if we can, if we keep that in mind and we look at situations in our life when we are not seeing things as they are, or we are seeing only the differences, we're not seeing the equality, we see how that feels and how that discomfort arises, or frustration, or anger, or fear. You know, I think my friend, part of his difficulty is fear, like where will he go and who will he be if he doesn't live in that place? What the uncertainty of it, losing the familiarity, his neighborhood, the house where he raised his child, the house he built with his own hands. So part of it is fear, part of it is anxiety, anger, frustration, not wanting to let go. But if we can see this moment as just another phase, this is things arise and fall away. Nothing remains. Nothing stays the same. This is just a new moment. Maybe if he could see this as a spring moment, I'm just staying with the metaphor of something new will arise. He has a country house where they will go stay until they find something else in Paris, but because he does not want to live in the countryside. His wife does, but he does not. So when we can clear out our attachments and our stuckness, when we can let the ice and the snow melt, then something new arises and we can see it more clearly. We see this in our meditation. And it's proportional to the amount of time we sit. So if we sit for half an hour, usually the same thing happens in that half an hour that happens if we sit throughout a weekend, or if we sit throughout a week, or if we sit throughout 2 weeks or a month or something. The same, we go through the same phases where we're really distracted and thinking about a million things, not paying attention to where we are, whatever. And then eventually things settle down a little bit. And we may, by the end of the sitting period, have some kind of clarity. And it's relative. You know, if you sit for 3 days, the clarity will be greater than if you sit for 30 minutes. If you sit for 3 weeks, it will be greater. Greater in the sense that more clear. And it's like we're letting the snow melt when we sit. Actually, everything is fine as it is. Everything is perfect as it is, even with our distracted mind. But we don't see it and appreciate it. So the snow needs to melt so that we can appreciate it and see the differences. Appreciate the differences. Appreciate our mind that is thinking a mile a minute. It can be useful, that mind. It has allowed us to function and be where we are today. However, if we become trapped and only focus on that mind, then we miss all the other minds that arise, everything else that arises. So I think in my friend's case, he's having a hard time letting go of how he thinks things are. And I understand. I mean, we all in moments like that have a really hard time. You know, we call that separation anxiety in psychological terms. And moving, losing a job, ending a relationship, death, severe illness, those are all occasions when we experience that. And yet, if we can just be with it, and I think this is what I, without realizing it, this is what I was trying to do with my friend, was accompany him and just be with it and appreciate it. I'm really grateful we had that moment together. I don't think we've had a moment, just the two of us, for, I don't know, decades probably. And it was a beautiful sunny day, and the whole wall of his apartment is like a greenhouse that his wife had all their plants in, and beautiful sunlight over the rooftops of Paris. It was a beautiful sunny day. It's a wonderful moment. Even though there was a sadness, letting go, moving on, acknowledging the passage of time. The reason he has such poor health is because for 50 years he smoked probably 20 or 30 cigarettes a day. And when he had a heart problem a few years ago and had to have open heart surgery and everything. And so he told me on Monday that he stopped smoking at that time. But he told me on Monday that if he makes it to 80, he's going to start smoking again. Because then it doesn't matter anymore. I don't know why at 80, but... I told his wife that, and she said, oh, I just hope he makes it to 80. She doesn't believe that he'll start smoking again. But kind of this appreciation for just where you are and how things are. And acknowledging this is how it is. And if you can truly do that, you can then see the beauty in it. Then you can, this is spring mind itself. I think we have a koan which talks about that. Exactly as that, this Zen master goes out walking, goes out picnicking. And when he comes back, one of the monks says, oh, where have you been? And he said, or something like that. And he said, oh, I went walking by the fresh green grasses. And I came back through the falling leaves or something. And or maybe it's the student who goes for a walk, I think, and says that. And the teacher said, oh, that sounds like spring mind itself. Because spring mind is not necessarily green grasses and budding flowers. It's loving each thing for itself. It's appreciating the beauty of each thing. So the falling leaves, but also for the green grasses. For appreciating the building of his house, his apartment, his loft, and appreciating the leaving it and moving on to something else, moving on. Time swiftly passes by, as we say. And I as we chant, you know, in that chant, when we say time swiftly passes by, and we say awaken, awaken, don't squander your life. My version of that is, you know, don't miss it. Don't miss your life right here and now. It's because it's happening right now. This is it. Someone asked me the other day about the vow that's reality is boundless. I vow to see it, we say. And it used to be the dharmas are boundless. And this person was saying to me, yeah, I read somewhere else that the translation is the dharma gates are boundless. I vow to see them. And I said, yeah, it's the same thing. And she said, I don't get that. And I said, well, maybe you should look at it. What are the dharma gates for you? What does that mean? She said, oh, I get the dharma gates are boundless. I vow to see them, but I don't get reality as boundless. I vow to see it. So I sent her away and told her to look at what are the dharma gates. Having in mind this other koan we have, where a monk asks Joshu, what is Joshu? And Joshu says, east gate, west gate, north gate, south gate. Another way of saying all of the dharma gates. There's the gate that is building a new home, and there's the gate that is leaving the home. There's the gate that is being a baby being born. There's the gate of the man growing old and in ill health. There's the gate of sitting here tonight, and there's the gate of not sitting here tomorrow night. There's the gate of cooking, and the gate of sleeping, and the gate of taking the cat to the vet, and the gate of leading a writing workshop. I'm just citing what my day involved. Spring gate, winter gate, summer gate, autumn gate. So if we can see that cold wisdom of equality, we love them all equally. If we can see them with the warm wisdom of distinction, differentiation, we love them each for what they are. Each and every gate. Like, you know, in my writing workshop this morning, you know, somebody said, was writing about something and talked about tourists. And I said afterwards, okay, but you know, your writing would be stronger if you said, which tourist? Who is that tourist? Where does that tourist come from? What does that tourist look like? How old is that tourist? What is the tourist wearing? Why is the tourist there? Instead of just tourists, it's like just a crowd. We could say this is the Zoom Zendo, but there's each square in it. It's true. It's a Zendo, and we're all participating. We're all here. All. And yet, each. And the same thing applies to the every moment of our lives. I think maybe it was at the retreat during Joa's transmission where I talked about Dogen's three minds. Maybe not, I don't know. The joyful mind, the elder or parental mind, and the magnanimous mind, great mind, of a Tenzo. He was saying this is what he's talking about. A Tenzo has these three minds. But this applies to whatever, whoever. The joyful mind is a mind of gratitude and appreciation for all that is. So appreciating all the ingredients, if we stay with the tens of the cook metaphor, appreciating each ingredient for what it is, and each tool, and each meal, each way of cooking, each spice, whatever. That's the joyful mind. The elder or parental mind is the mind that pays careful attention to each one of those things and takes good care of it, treats it appropriately. So realizes that a potato is different than a cucumber and treats it differently, works with it differently, appreciates it for what it is, and then cares for it with that in mind, like a parent would care for a child. That's why it's parental mind. And then the magnanimous, the great mind, that's like, it's, I think Dogen says it's like a mountain or something, or an ocean. It doesn't resist anything. This is the winter, the cold wisdom of loving everything equally. It includes everything. And actually, therefore, can appreciate things as they are and care for them because it's all-inclusive, this great mind. Actually, you know, in the Japanese or the Chinese, it's the heart mind. So it's not the, it's not this head mind, it's the heart mind we're talking about. And we cultivate this with our in our sitting. Even if we don't think about it, that's what's happening. We're cultivating these three minds. And we're lucky with Zen practice that we are encouraged to apply it in our daily lives. We're not, at least the way that we practice as lay people, where you don't say, go live in a monastery and put this into practice. We say, you know, get up off your cushion and go into your life. So help your friend move. Help your friend who's sick. Take the cat to the vet. Whatever you all did today. And you all had very different activities today, I'm sure. And yet, we can, with our cold wisdom of winter, we can just love it, love every activity, all of you equally. And with our warm wisdom, we can then see the distinctions and appreciate each activity for itself. One person's job was not better than another. It's like cleaning the toilets or being the Eno in a retreat. It's the same. And yet it's very different. So maybe I'll stop for there and let you ask questions or share whatever comes up with you, for you. It's much richer, actually, if you, instead of just my uniform voice, like snow on everything.
It's so, a question, if your friends feel the same, if you know, if your friends can see these teachings that you see?
He probably wouldn't use these words. And I think it's just such a painful moment for him that it's hard. But I think on some level he understands, he knows. And he's been pushed to this situation because he has to do it. He can't live there anymore because he wouldn't be able to go up and down the steps anymore. So I think, you know, sometimes
it's only a feeling. It's a feeling from you by seeing this situation, and for him,
it's a different feeling. Probably.
It's take more time, perhaps.
Right. Exactly. But I think it's true that we did spend a really nice time together on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
So something, there is something. And yesterday too, but my husband, no, Tuesday too, but my husband was there too. And we were like really doing business because we had to. Had to. Time was pressing.
Yeah, it was this question.
Okay. Thank you.
Did you actually have an intention to let him switch to a different mode? Like an intention to actually teach him something or help him seeing something?
No.
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 Not at all.
Not at all.
I did not have that intention. And I was really acting just from a place of, I could see that he needed help. Saturday night, there was a big party. They had their last party in the place, and I was there. And I saw that he really needed help, and I offered three times, like they say you're supposed to do, you know, in Buddhism, you're supposed to ask three times, maybe even more. And he said no, or he didn't say anything. And then on Sunday, he called me and he said, yes, please come and help me on Monday. So it was really just coming from a place of my long relationship with him and our long friendship and seeing that he needed, he was in need, and also my own attachment to the place because I've spent so much time there. So, but with no intention of, no. No.
I think I'm asking that question. The question comes from 2 days ago. I went to the hospital to see a friend of mine who is dying. He's really good, really bad shape, and it's very likely that he's going to die within the next weeks. And it was hard. It was hard to. I was wondering what I could provide for him. So I was trying to introduce the possibility that he could maybe just do a meditation on his body and stuff, but he was just so taken by the problem of his memory. He can't remember things, and he couldn't remember that his father died 10 years ago, and just couldn't remember. So he was obsessed by that. So he was, but I felt my desire to help and my desire to teach him something that could make it easier for him. But, so I don't know that if that was a good option or not.
Well, you know, like my teacher said to me when I started teaching, although teaching is not teaching, you have to meet people where they are. And if you come to it with an idea that you're going to teach something, you're not helping anybody. And there's nothing to teach. You know, we have this koan, what is there a Zen that has not been taught to the people? And Uman, I think it's Uman, responds, yes, there is. And she said, what is the teaching that has not been taught to the people? And he said, you know, it's not mind, it's not Buddha, it's not, I forget what the third one is. There's nothing to teach. The best thing, the only thing we can do is to be present and accompany. So, you know, be present to his despair at not remembering that his father died, you know. That's the best thing we can do. The koan too of, you know, what was, I don't know why I've got all these koans in my head, but what's the teaching that Shakyamuni taught all his life or something? And Joshu says, or no, Uman says, one teaching in response. It's just responding to the situation. That's it. There's nothing else. That's the one. That's Gute's one. That's Mu. And it's also east gate, west gate, north gate, south gate. So whatever the gate is, you know. But, yeah. Freddie, you had your hand up.
Yes. Sometimes it's difficult, and the only thing is just to be there with the person, to be fully present. That's what I experienced when my father was at hospital. Just being with him, always, it was, I was sitting with him, I was there with him. Each moment was precious. Each moment was perfect. Just be there with the person. It's fantastic just to be with someone. There's no regret, just there, one with the person.
Yeah, thank you, Freddie. Yeah. And it doesn't have to be in, you know, in heavy moments of, you know, old age, sickness, and death. It's also in joyous moments. Can we fully, fully be joyful with someone? Can we fully welcome, you know, whatever moment arises? That's, it doesn't even have to be joyful. It can be just ordinary. Just this, cleaning the toilets, taking the cat to the vet, whatever. So,
years ago, I was by a friend like Joa, a friend who was in a hospital, dying, and without moving, without autonomy, and we come every day, and we know that he like things, order in things. He like it's a teacher who make sketches. It's a it's a teacher in the art school, and he like all the things very geometric, organized, and I know, and I feel one day that we bring flowers, we bring a place with flowers, and one day I feel that he don't like the place where these flowers are. I feel something it's not okay. And I was not the first person near him. I was one of the persons who come here. And I began all the days, the next days, I came and I ordered the flowers for him. And he looked at me like it was enough for him that I come and I order these flowers to him in bed, see the flowers, right? It was the moment where, and I thought, what I can do for him, it's to come and to order the flowers every day. And I do that. It was a sign that I become from him.
And you could, because you were not attached to how you thought it, what you should do for him, you could pay attention and see what was the appropriate thing to do for him, which is very important. No? Instead of coming with your idea, you listened, you observed, you saw, like you said, you just saw that that was what he wanted or needed,
mm-hmm.
that you take care of the flowers. Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Yesterday, today, I invited my mother for lunch. I texted her. I was at the library. I texted her. She wanted to have lunch with me. And we, during lunch, she was talking about my, my uncle, her, brother, her, yes, her brother. Who is very sick. The doctors can't find what's wrong with him. And so he went to the south of the country for a few days with his wife. They are there now. And he wants to visit like these childhood places, which are common to all of them, because he has this idea that he's going to die soon. Because he doesn't really feel well at all. And so my mother was telling me about this and how I think when she turned 70, I'm not sure, she took the bus and she did more or less the same thing. Because this is something that she and there was this idea that although I don't think she actually said it, but there's always seems to be this idea that the past was more happy than the present or something, but maybe this is just my own stuff. my own way of looking at it. And for a while, I was kind of, I don't know if it's stuck. My thing was that I don't get it. No. Because because she's not in the past, you know, and now is now. And so for a while I was this, I don't get this. And what I kind of realize now is that there's nothing to get. There's just, and actually I was thinking how she's wiser than me, because of course the past and happy memories and happy situations and relationships with people that are gone, her brother who is getting sicker and sicker each day, another one of her sisters turned 80 a few days ago, and through all of this she was not talking about her voyage a few years ago and talking about my uncle now. Sometimes she would cry a bit. And then I was thinking that she's actually wiser than me, because she does appreciate the present as well. She has her grandsons, she has a grandson which she appreciates and she loves, and I feel that she can appreciate the fact that they're getting older, and so the relationship with a grandmother changes, you know, because they're adolescents, so things change, and she sometimes mentions that how things are changing, but she's, you know, and she says she's okay with that, and she really is. Yes, of course, there's always some sorrow or some longing for how things will be or something like that, but she really appreciates how things are now and what. Now it's a different kind of relationship. And I'm saying all this because, yeah, there was nothing to get. This is what I think I realized. There was nothing to get. I don't need to get it to get. There's, it's just... appreciating thank you.
Thank you. Tiago.
Hi. Hello. What I hear when I listen to you talk about like sales story and your friend moving house, what comes up to me is service. It's just be of service, and. And in a sense that you don't have the intention to help, it's just, you're just there. You just do what it needs doing. Yeah. And it just speaks to me as the service, that's all. Thank you.
Yeah, that's a good reminder about service, serving. Which is just responding to what, to the situation. Yeah. And as we know, you know, if we go to a restaurant and the waiter brings us what he wants to bring us, we won't be satisfied because it's not what we wanted, you know. So the waiter has to have an open mind and just listen to what you ask for and then bring it. Yeah.
Yeah, I really want to thank you all here in Beek Ben Nijme in Holland. It's I feel a gap at sitting and not sitting, daily life. And I feel you as a group supporting me, bringing the Zendo in my home. And that's nice. That's very beautiful. Thank you. Oh, it's very inspiring.
Thank you, Jan. Thank you for sitting with us in the Zendo too. Okay, I guess we stop there with the vows.
Mm-hmm.